Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. One reason I love Jane Brody's health reporting for the New York Times is that she's just so darn honest. In our first article today, When Drug Side Effects Pose Real Dangers, she admits to not following doctor's orders, even when she knows she should. It must take a lot of guts to admit to that in a major newspaper. I'm not sure it's a good idea that she let people know in case they decide to follow suit, but I admire her courage and honesty. Our second article comes from the October 2019 AARP Bulletin, and it looks at off-label marketing and usage of drugs. Turns out there is a 1 in 5 chance that the medicine we are prescribed has not been approved for our specific condition. Are off-label prescriptions a risk or a good use of available medications? What is clear is that either way, drug companies are making a lot of money. And we'll go to our first article, When Drug Side Effects Pose Real Dangers, and this was published on December 9th, 2020. About a month ago, I took myself off a medication without first contacting the doctor who prescribed it, a step I've often cautioned others never to do. A neurologist had put me on the anticonvulsant drug Keppra as a preventive in case a seizure had caused an otherwise unexplained fall on my head and brief memory loss. The neurologist was being appropriately cautious. 2 years earlier, I'd had an equally mysterious accident accompanied by about a 15-minute memory gap. A heart rhythm disorder was ruled out, and it would be weeks before I could undergo a 3-day brainwave study to check for seizure activity. But after 10 days on Keppra, which the label warned could cause drowsiness, I was far worse than very sleepy. I could barely function. I was spending the day in bed, unable to work, read, or even watch TV. And I was depressed, enough so that I began to list activities I could cancel, maybe even life itself. When a friend told me she'd been very fatigued and depressed while taking a different anticonvulsant, I had to know whether my symptoms were caused by the head injury or the drug. And the fastest way to find out on a Saturday night was to stop taking the drug. Within 36 hours, I was a new person, nearly back to my normal level of energy, ability to work, and enthusiasm for life. At first, I thought I would adjust to the drug's side effects, but they had only gotten worse each day. My friend said she'd stopped taking the anticonvulsant when she found herself sitting out on the ledge of an open window. On Monday, I called the neurologist's office and was appropriately chastised for stopping the drug without his okay, but at least I lived to tell the tale. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's abandoned a medication without, or even against, a doctor's advice. No doubt many like me experienced side effects that seemed to be much worse than the condition the medication was supposed to treat. The rule of thumb in medicine, first, do no harm, has as its corollary that the expected benefits of treatment should outweigh its potential risks, which is the basis for approval of prescription drugs by the Food and Drug Administration. Marketing approval includes review of the package insert, which is supposed to list possible side effects, from minor to serious, that showed up during pre-market tests. Consumers are urged to read these inserts before taking a new medication. But as with the now required lists of side effects and warnings that accompany drug ads in print and on the air, these can terrify some patients, prompting them to refuse to take medications that would actually help them. According to Timothy O'Shea, a clinical pharmacist who writes about prescription drugs, each year an estimated 4.5 million Americans visit a physician's office or emergency room because of side effects related to their prescription medications. Among the 10 scariest side effects Dr. O'Shea listed in an article in Pharmacy Times are hallucinations that can result from psychiatric medications like Seroquel and Haldol, the sleep-enhancing drugs Ambien and Lunesta, and some anti-seizure drugs. On a trip to Panama some years ago, my roommate developed psychotic hallucinations from the drug Lariam, which the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention had recommended at the time to prevent malaria. Also alarming is memory loss that sometimes results from the non-benzodiazepine sedative hypnotics, which include Ambien, Lunesta, and Sonata, Dr. O'Shea wrote. Most worrisome, however, is an increased risk of suicidal thoughts and behaviors in children, adolescents, and young adults associated with all antidepressants. All drugs, prescription and over-the-counter, have side effects or the potential to cause them. And the secret to safe and beneficial use lies in knowing what they might be and how they may be affected by your health, habits, diet, allergy sensitivities, and other medications you take. Minor adjustments can often make a big difference in how effective and safe a medication will be for you. For example, people on blood thinners must be cautious about taking aspirin and other non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs that can increase the risk of bleeding. In addition to harmful drug-to-drug interactions, many risks linked to medication result from interactions with food, drinks, supplements, and other ailments. For example, some drugs, including most painkillers, are best taken with food to reduce gastrointestinal side effects, whereas others should be taken on an empty stomach to enhance their absorption. The dose of the anticoagulant Coumadin has to be adjusted for consumption of certain vegetables rich in vitamin K, like spinach, kale, and broccoli, which can diminish the drug's effectiveness. Grapefruit and pomegranate can increase the effects of some statin drugs and drugs that treat high blood pressure. And blood pressure drugs called ACE inhibitors can impair excretion of potassium from foods like bananas. In general, it's best to avoid taking drugs at the same time that you take vitamins, herbal remedies, or other supplements. And unless instructed otherwise, take all medicines with a full glass of water. Probably the most common harmful drug-to-diet interaction is that between medications and alcohol, which can enhance or diminish a drug's effects in dangerous ways. Drinking alcohol while taking a narcotic painkiller can result in an accidental, even fatal, overdose. Even in small amounts, alcohol can intensify a drug's side effects, causing sleepiness, lightheadedness, and inability to concentrate or safely drive or operate machinery. When prescribed a new medication, it's best to read the package insert before you take the first dose. You might also ask the pharmacist what you should know to ensure the drug's safe use. If you suspect you're having an adverse drug reaction, don't follow my example. In most cases, you should continue taking the drug, but contact the doctor as soon as possible. However, if you develop an allergic reaction like severe itching, swelling, or shortness of breath, stop taking the drug immediately and go to the nearest emergency room or call 911. Be especially wary if you believe you're reacting to a drug that has only recently come on the market. Serious problems sometimes don't become apparent until a drug has been used for years by lots of people. Any severe drug reactions should be reported to the FDA. The agency's MedWatch program, in effect since 1993, asks consumers as well as health professionals to report serious adverse events. A reporting form with instructions can be found at www.fda.gov/MedWatch. That's MEDWATCH. I was tempted to read that really quickly, like they do the side effects on the commercials, but hopefully I didn't and read it at a good pace for you. Let's go now to our second article from AARP Bulletin. This is titled When Doctors Go Off Script, and this was written by Joe Kaita. That little pill you popped this morning has survived an epic journey. It can take over a decade and billions of dollars for a new prescription drug to travel from initial formulation through testing, past review by the Food and Drug Administration, and into your home. This is among the most rigorous approval processes for a consumer product in the world, designed to ensure the highest levels of safety and efficacy. But here's something startling. Once a drug finally gets approved for a specific usage, it may be prescribed for different diseases or ailments, in different dosages to other age groups, as a doctor sees fit. And it's legal to do that. Physicians aren't even required to tell you when they're prescribing drugs outside of FDA guidelines, a practice called off-label prescribing, as the usage isn't described on the label. This is not an insignificant practice. A 2006 study, one of the few done on the topic, reported an estimated 21% of prescriptions written by office-based U.S. physicians for commonly prescribed medications were for off-label uses. Today, off-label prescribing is business as usual for many doctors. Organizations such as the American Medical Association and the American Psychiatric Association strongly support the practice and affirm the ability of physicians to prescribe drugs off-label when based upon sound scientific evidence or sound medical opinion. But off-label drug usage is complex, in part because there is so little data reported on the practice. Studies are rarely done to see if off-label drugs match FDA-approved medicines in effectiveness or if there are additional side effects. David Cavalla, author of the 2014 book Off-Label Prescribing: Justifying Unapproved Medicine, is a critic of the practice. While the regulatory authorities are very strict about the manufacturing standards and documentation supporting the medicines we take, they do not regulate the way they are prescribed, he writes. This is a grave scandal at the heart of our healthcare system, an offense to the principle of evidence-based medicine. What is certain is that the practice is highly lucrative for the pharmaceutical industry. While drug makers are largely prohibited from promoting off-label uses for their medicines, that hasn't appeared to stop them entirely. According to a 2018 report, from 2004 to 2017, pharmaceutical companies paid more than $11 billion in financial, criminal, and civil penalties for unlawful promotion, including of off-label uses of drugs. The landmark Oklahoma court decision in late August, in which Johnson & Johnson was fined $572 million, was in part related to the intense marketing of opioids. Here is what you need to know about the practice and the role the drug industry plays. The use of a drug is deemed off-label, not just when prescribed for a disease or condition it's not approved to treat, but also when it's given to an age group or in a different dosage, or for a length of time beyond FDA parameters. Off-labeling is particularly prevalent in pediatrics and geriatrics, since fewer clinical trials involve those under 18 or over 65. Oncology, where end-stage cancers prompt riskier treatments, and mental health, where many psychiatric disorders lack an official pharmacologic treatment. There are also thousands of rare diseases for which there are few on-label medicinal options. Take the case of Lisa Rosendahl, who at age 21 was diagnosed with a rare brain tumor. Rosendahl underwent years of radiation and chemotherapy plus 10 operations. She had her ups and downs, but the tumor was persistent. Jean Mulcahy-Levy, a pediatric neuro-oncologist at Children's Hospital Colorado, suggested treating her with an off-label combination of medications that included chloroquine, an anti-malarial medication that's been around since 1934. This combination of drugs had been used in only one other brain tumor case in this way, and of course, was not FDA approved, but it had shown promise in lab experiments. Lisa had been going downhill and probably only would have lasted a few more months, says her father, Greg Rosendahl, a 70-year-old retired airline captain living in Boulder, Colorado. So we decided to try it, and it had a dramatic effect. It worked so well that Lisa was able to go back to college and start looking toward the future. It was wonderful to see her happy and energetic again. Ultimately, the cancer started growing again. Rosendahl died at age 26 in 2017. However, her doctor points out that patients with her type of tumor usually live just 14 months. Rosendahl survived for years, in part due to the use of an off-label combination, her doctor says. Rosendahl's situation was unique, but medications are prescribed off-label every day in mainstream medicine. Consider, metformin is the first-line drug for type 2 diabetes, but it has been used off-label for weight loss, heart health, polycystic ovary syndrome, and even possible cancer prevention benefits. Certain antidepressants are also approved for post-traumatic stress disorder and obsessive-compulsive disorder, but they are prescribed off-label for hot flashes and generalized anxiety. A 2017 study found that in Canada, just 1 in 6 off-label antidepressant prescriptions were backed by strong scientific evidence. Propranolol, a beta blocker approved for treating high blood pressure and heart conditions, is used off-label for reducing anxiety. So how do legitimate drugs like these, approved for specific purposes, end up being used for very different indications? A couple of things happen, explains Brent Forrester, chief of the Division of Geriatric Psychiatry at McLean Hospital in Belmont, Massachusetts, and president-elect of the American Association for Geriatric Psychiatry. One is you have some creative doctors who understand pharmacology very well, saying, I wonder if this medication that's approved for something else, because of the way it works in the brain, might actually have, say, depression or anxiety-relieving properties. Let's try it. Or other smart doctors notice other effects after prescribing a drug. For example, clinical researchers in the 1950s noticed that patients being treated for tuberculosis with a certain drug had an improvement in their mood, he says. They felt better, and the antidepressant drugs we have today grew out of that. Doctors also learn about off-label uses by attending medical conferences, reading journals and abstracts, talking with colleagues, and listening to patients. Often there is good supporting evidence for off-label use. Amid the clinical trials that won a drug's primary FDA approval, there may be corollary findings that back a secondary use. Or the manufacturer may decide to conduct or fund additional studies and distribute the results. Now keep in mind that once a drug is FDA approved, it sells for the same price whether it's prescribed on label or off. So any additional uses that arise mean instant bonus profits for its manufacturer. And sometimes there's significantly more money to be made from off-label sales than on-label ones. This is part of why the off-label market is so huge. There's little incentive for a drug company to invest extra money and effort to submit a supplemental new drug application, SNDA, to the FDA if doctors are already prescribing a medicine off-label or if it has generic competition and is no longer on patent. Even though this approval process is more streamlined, it can still take about a year and cost tens of millions of dollars. We've tried to make the SNDA process more efficient, especially in the oncology setting, former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb told AARP in an April interview, shortly before his departure from the agency. But a lot of times, the financial calculation of trying to get some of these subsequent indications onto labeling, especially for niche uses, doesn't make much sense. Up through the mid-2000s, pharmaceutical companies and their sales reps routinely promoted off-label uses of their products directly to physicians, often over fancy dinners or on expensive junkets, and sometimes with only sketchy supporting evidence. But the FDA, working with the U.S. Department of Justice, cracked down on the practice, empowered by federal regulations and guidelines regarding the direct marketing of prescription medicines for their approved purpose. Many states have similar rules, but today the situation is still complex. Drug companies remain largely prohibited from raising the issue of a drug's off-label uses, and over the past decade, the FDA has successfully challenged off-label marketing by pharmaceutical companies in major cases. Some led to guilty findings, some to large financial settlements. But court cases have narrowed some of the FDA's oversight. For example, the U.S. Supreme Court has taken issue with violating the First Amendment right of commercial speech, notes a brief on the topic in the journal Health Affairs. The brief also notes that the FDA has limited capacity to review and monitor all drug company communications to doctors. Kelly Bagby is Vice President for Litigation on Health, Housing, Hunger, and Human Services at AARP Foundation. She has successfully litigated cases involving the off-label use of antipsychotics on nursing home residents with dementia. Despite the FDA crackdown, the nursing home issue persists, Bagby says. She notes a Human Rights Watch report that said an estimated 179,000 plus residents in nursing facilities nationwide received antipsychotics off-label in an average week, sometimes without their consent. This is despite a black box warning, the strongest form of warning in the FDA's arsenal, that such drugs are not indicated for people with dementia and can increase their risk of death. There have been criminal cases against companies such as Eli Lilly and Johnson & Johnson and its subsidiaries because they were basically paying to get these drugs to be used more prevalently in order to make a stronger profit, Bagby says. They got doctors very comfortable with prescribing them, and that's why we do so much litigation in this area, to wake people up to the dangers. Doctors we spoke with say pharmaceutical reps have generally backed away from off-label promotion, but given the potential profits in the off-label market, Cavella says drug manufacturers may find other ways. For example, Cavella says some drug reps learn how to cue doctors to ask off-label questions, which opens the door for their companies to send information that may or may not be balanced. Drug companies also fund studies and research, which can influence findings, and they organize seminars and conferences around disease education at which their products are featured. And there could be free samples, free meals, and direct payments to doctors for speaking appearances or other services. According to an analysis in the medical journal JAMA, the amount spent on marketing to healthcare professionals by pharmaceutical companies in 2016 reached $20.3 billion. Cavella says that because there's so much money on the table in the off-label market, pharmaceutical companies may be willing to absorb fines as the cost of doing business, though he said this happens less often than before. Pfizer was fined more than $3 billion from 2004 to 2014 for the off-label or unapproved promotion of medical products, according to violationtracker.org. Plus, the pharmaceutical and health product sector spends more on lobbying than any other U.S. sector, $4 billion over the past 20 years, according to OpenSecrets.org. Its agenda includes less FDA regulation and oversight, some significant victories, a 2012 case, United States versus Coronia, ended with a judge's ruling that conversations between sales representatives and doctors are protected under the First Amendment for speech promoting the lawful off-label use of an FDA-approved drug. In 2017, Arizona loosened restrictions on off-label promotion with the Free Speech in Medicine Act. In 2018, Tennessee passed a similar law that says no state regulatory board may revoke, fail to renew, or take any other action against a pharmaceutical manufacturer's or representative's healthcare institution's or physician's license solely for engaging in truthful promotion of off-label uses. We asked the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, PhRMA, which represents 35 biopharmaceutical companies, for an interview to discuss off-label drug issues. It declined, but its Director of Public Affairs, Andrew Paoleni, sent a statement. In part, it reads, To exercise sound medical judgment in treating patients, healthcare professionals must understand the full range of treatment options, including both established and emerging information about available medications. Pharma and its members believe that the availability of a wider range of truthful and non-misleading information can help healthcare professionals and payers make better informed medical decisions for their patients. The ability to more freely communicate such information furthers public health interests. According to the National Center for Health Statistics, the average American is living almost 10 years longer now than in 1960, a fact that you've probably witnessed in your own family and neighborhood or experienced yourself. Part of that life extension may be due to drugs developed and supplied by the pharmaceutical industry. And despite the apparent Wild West nature of the off-label market, the medical establishment generally defends it. It is not within the FDA's authority to regulate the practice of medicine, says Richard Schilsky, Chief Medical Officer of the American Society of Clinical Oncology, ASCO. And the FDA would be the first one to tell you that. It can't regulate how doctors practice. It's not in their regulations. This gets to the crux of the matter. In a drug marketplace that is increasingly complex and competitive, are doctors too overwhelmed and too busy to be learned intermediaries and, well, artists? Indeed, one survey of about 1,200 primary care physicians and psychiatrists found that many thought some common drug treatments were FDA approved for certain uses, but in fact, they were off-label. Schilsky acknowledges the accelerating pace of change in medicine. In oncology, he says, lots of new data comes out frequently. It's incumbent on all of us to practice evidence-based medicine. The medical profession has to be self-critical, to hold to standards, and to provide guidelines. But it's also incumbent on patients to understand the care they're receiving. Consumers should always ask their doctors for the information for the particular use of the drug, says Gottlieb, former head of the FDA. It's a very straightforward question. Is the drug approved for that use? And that's it for our side effects and off-label usages of pharmaceuticals. Thank you for tuning in to Sound Body. Stay well, and please come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Sound Body, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, WXXI.org.